2. Lizaveta Nikolaevna's business with Shatov turned out, to my surprise, to be really only concerned with literature. I had imagined, I don't know why, that she had asked him to come with some other object. We, Mavriky Nikolaevich and I, that is, seeing that they were talking aloud and not trying to hide anything from us, began to listen, and at last they asked our advice. It turned out that Lizaveta Nikolaevna was thinking of bringing out a book, which she thought would be of use, but being quite inexperienced, she needed someone to help her. The earnestness with which she began to explain her plan to Shatov quite surprised me. She must be one of the new people, I thought. She has not been to Switzerland for nothing. Shatov listened with attention, his eyes fixed on the ground, showing not the slightest surprise that a giddy young lady in society should take up work that seemed so out of keeping with her. Her literary scheme was as follows. Numbers of papers and journals are published in the capitals and the provinces of Russia, and every day a number of events are reported in them. The year passes. The newspapers are everywhere folded up and put away in cupboards, or are torn up and become litter, or are used for making parcels or wrapping things. Numbers of these facts make an impression and are remembered by the public, but in the course of years they are forgotten. Many people would like to look them up, but it is a labour for them to embark upon this sea of paper, often knowing nothing of the day or place or even year in which the event occurred. Yet if all the facts for a whole year were brought together in one book, on a definite plan and with a definite object, under headings with references, arranged according to months and days, such a compilation might reflect the characteristics of Russian life for the whole year, even though the facts published are only a small fraction of the events that take place. Instead of a number of newspapers, there would be a few fat books, that's all, observed Shatov. But Lizaveta Nikolaevna clung to her idea, in spite of the difficulty of carrying it out and her inability to describe it. It ought to be one book, and not even a very thick one, she maintained. But even if it were thick, it would be clear, for the great point would be the plan and the character of the presentation of facts. Of course, not all would be collected and reprinted. The decrees and acts of government, local regulations, laws, all such facts, however important, might be altogether omitted from the proposed publication. They could leave out a great deal and confine themselves to a selection of events more or less characteristic of the moral life of the people, of the personal character of the Russian people at the present moment. Of course, everything might be put in. Strange incidents, fires, public subscriptions, anything good or bad, every speech or word, perhaps even floodings of the rivers, perhaps even some government decrees, but only such things to be selected as are characteristic of the period. Everything would be put in with a certain view, a special significance and intention, with an idea which would illuminate the facts looked at in the aggregate as a whole. And finally, the book ought to be interesting, even for light reading, apart from its value as a work of reference. It would be, so to say, a presentation of the spiritual, moral, inner life of Russia for a whole year. We want everyone to buy it. We want it to be a book that will be found on every table, Lisa declared. I understand that all lies in the plan, and that's why I apply to you, she concluded. She grew very warm over it, and although her explanation was obscure and incomplete, Shatov began to understand. So it would amount to something with a political tendency. A selection of facts with a special tendency, he muttered, still not raising his head. Not at all. We must not select with a particular bias, and we ought not to have any political tendency in it. Nothing but impartiality. That will be the only tendency. But a tendency would be no harm, said Shatov, with a slight movement. And one can hardly avoid it if there is any selection at all. The very selection of facts will suggest how they are to be understood. Your idea is not a bad one. Then such a book is possible, cried Lisa delightedly. We must look into it and consider. It's an immense undertaking. One can't work it out on the spur of the moment. We need experience. And when we do publish the book, I doubt whether we shall find out how to do it. Possibly after many trials, but the thought is alluring. It's a useful idea. He raised his eyes at last, and they were positively sparkling with pleasure, he was so interested. Was it your own idea? He asked Lisa in a friendly and, as it were, bashful way.
The idea's no trouble, you know. It's the plan is the trouble, Lisa smiled.
I understand very little. I am not very clever, and I only pursue what is clear to me myself. Pursue?
Perhaps that's not the right word, Lisa inquired quickly.
The word is all right. I meant nothing.
I thought while I was abroad that even I might be of some use. I have money of my own lying idle. Why shouldn't I, even I, work for the common cause? Besides, the idea somehow occurred to me all at once of itself. I didn't invent it at all, and was delighted with it. But I saw at once that I couldn't get on without someone to help, because I am not competent to do anything of myself. My helper, of course, would be the co-editor of the book. We would go halves. You would give the plan and the work. Mine would be the original idea and the means for publishing it. Would the book pay its expenses, do you think?
If we hit on a good plan, the book will go.
I warn you that I am not doing it for profit, but I am very anxious that the book should circulate and should be very proud of making a profit.
Well, but how do I come in?
Why, I invite you to be my fellow worker, to go halves. You will think out the plan.
How do you know that I am capable of thinking out the plan?
People have talked about you to me, and here I've heard, I know that you are very clever and are working for the cause, and think a great deal. Pyotr Stepanovich Verhovensky spoke about you in Switzerland, she added hurriedly. He's a very clever man, isn't he?
Shatov stole a fleeting, momentary glance at her, but dropped his eyes again.
Nikolai Vsevolodovich told me a great deal about you, too.
Shatov suddenly turned red.
But here are the newspapers.
Lisa hurriedly picked up from a chair a bundle of newspapers that lay tied up, ready.
I've tried to mark the facts here for selection, to sort them, and I have put the papers together, you will see.
Shatov took the bundle.
Take them home and look at them. Where do you live?
In Bogoyevolyensky Street, Filipov's house.
I know. I think it's there, too, I've been told, a captain lives, beside you, Mr. Lebyadkin, said Lisa, in the same hurried manner.
Shatov sat for a full minute, with the bundle in his outstretched hand, making no answer and staring at the floor. "You'd better find someone else for these jobs. I shouldn't suit you at all," he brought out at last, dropping his voice in an awfully strange way, almost to a whisper. Lisa flushed crimson.
"What jobs are you speaking of? Mavriky Nikolaevich," she cried. "Please bring that letter here."
I, too, followed Mavriky Nikolaevich to the table.
"Look at this,"
she turned suddenly to me, unfolding the letter in great excitement.
"Have you ever seen anything like it? Please read it aloud. I want Mr. Shatov to hear it, too."
With no little astonishment, I read aloud the following missive. "To the perfection, Miss Tushin. Gracious Lady, Lizaveta Nikolaevna. Oh, she's a sweet queen, Lizaveta Tushin, when on side-saddle she gallops by, and in the breeze her fair tresses fly. Or when with her mother in church she bows low, and on devout faces a red flush doth flow. Then for the joys of lawful wedlock I aspire, and follow her and her mother with tears of desire, composed by an unlearned man in the midst of a discussion. Gracious lady, I pity myself above all men that I did not lose my arm at Sevastopol, not having been there at all, but served all the campaign delivering paltry provisions, which I look on as a degradation. You are a goddess of antiquity,
and I am nothing, but have had a glimpse of infinity. Look on it as a poem and no more, for, after all, poetry is nonsense, and justifies what would be considered impudence in prose. Can the sun be angry with the infusoria, if the latter composes verses to her from the drop of water, where there is a multitude of them if you look through the microscope? Even the Club for Promoting Humanity to the Larger Animals in Tip-Top Society in Petersburg, which rightly feels compassion for dogs and horses, despises the brief infusoria, making no reference to it whatsoever, because it is not big enough. I'm not big enough either. The idea of marriage might seem droll, but soon I shall have property worth 200 souls through a misanthropist whom you ought to despise. I can tell a lot, and can undertake to produce documents that would mean Siberia. Don't despise my proposal. A letter from an infusoria is, of course, in verse. Captain Lebyadkin, your most humble friend, and he has time no end. That was written by a man in a drunken condition, a worthless fellow, I cried indignantly. I know him. That letter I received yesterday, Lisa began to explain, flushing and speaking hurriedly. I saw myself at once that it came from some foolish creature, and I haven't yet shown it to Maman, for fear of upsetting her more. But if he is going to keep on like that, I don't know how to act. Mavriky Nikolaevich wants to go out and forbid him to do it. As I have looked upon you as a colleague, she turned to Shatov, and as you live here, I wanted to question you so as to judge what more is to be expected of him. He is a drunkard and a worthless fellow, Shatov muttered with apparent reluctance. Is he always so stupid? No, he's not stupid at all when he's not drunk. I used to know a general who wrote verses exactly like that, I observed, laughing. One can see from the letter that he is clever enough for his own purposes. Mavriky Nikolaevich, who had till then been silent, put in unexpectedly. He lives with some sister, Lisa queried. Yes, with his sister. They say he tyrannizes over her. Is that true? Shatov looked at Lisa again, scowled and muttering, "What business is it of mine?" moved towards the door. "Ah, stay," cried Lisa in a flutter. "Where are you going? We have so much still to talk over." "What is there to talk over? I'll let you know tomorrow."
"Why, the most important thing of all, the printing press. Do believe me that I am not in jest, that I really want to work in good earnest," Lisa assured him in growing agitation. "If we decide to publish it, where is it to be printed? You know it's a most important question, for we shan't go to Moscow for it, and the printing press here is out of the question for such a publication. I made up my mind long ago to set up a printing press of my own, in your name perhaps. And I know Maman will allow it, as long as it is in your name."
"How do you know that I could be a printer?" Shatov asked sullenly.
"Why, Pyotr Stepanovich told me of you in Switzerland, and referred me to you as one who knows the business and able to set up a printing press. He even meant to give me a note to you from himself, but I forgot it." Shatov's face changed, as I recollect now. He stood for a few seconds longer, then went out of the room. Lisa was angry. "Does he always go out like that?" she asked, turning to me. I was just shrugging my shoulders when Shatov suddenly came back, went straight up to the table, and put down the roll of papers he had taken.
"I'm not going to be your helper. I haven't the time."
"Why? Why? I think you are angry," Lisa asked him in a grieved and imploring voice. The sound of her voice seemed to strike him. For some moments he looked at her intensely, as though trying to penetrate to her very soul.
"No matter," he muttered softly. "I don't want to."
And he went away altogether. Lisa was completely overwhelmed, quite disproportionately, in fact, so it seemed to me.
"Wonderfully queer man," Mavriky Nikolaevich observed aloud.